It's me again, Hank the Cow Dog. It was a cold, windy night in February. It had begun to snow, and the cowboys were worried that it might turn into a blizzard. It did. One of the worst blizzards I'd ever seen. As I lay there in front of the stove in Slim's house, little did I know that within a matter of hours, I would have to leave the warmth and security of the house and go out alone into the teeth of the blinded blizzard and perform an errand of mercy. I didn't know all that, and you're not supposed to know it either. It comes later in the story, but I kind of blurted it out without thinking. I shouldn't have done that. Forget I said it. Okay, Grover and I had gone down to Slim's place to spend the night, but let me hasten to add that our going down to Slim's place had nothing, whatever, to do with the fact that he allowed us dogs to sleep inside in front of his wood stove. See, I really don't approve of sleeping indoors, and I've never had much use for... All right, maybe the sleeping indoors beside the stove factor had played a small part in our decision to camp out with Slim that night, but only a very small part. Mainly, I thought that he needed some company and also the security that comes from having the head of ranch security close at hand. No kidding, that was the main reason. Well, it was along about 9 o'clock. Slim had been sitting in his big rocking chair and reading a livestock magazine while we dogs guarded the stove. You never know when some nut will try to steal your stove. All at once, Slim stood up and yawned.
Boys, all this excitement is about to wear me out.
He fished out his pocket watch. Good honk. It ain't but 9 o'clock, and I'm already fighting to stay awake. He wandered into the kitchen and opened up the icebox and pulled out the makings for a ketchup and bread sandwich. When he took the first bite, ketchup oozed out the backside. It looked pretty awful. He gnawed it down to a stub, licked his fingers, and pitched the stub over in our direction. Two little corners of bread splattered with ketchup. I sniffed it and, shall we say, turned it down. Even Drover, who will eat anything that doesn't eat him first, even Drover turned it down. We whapped our tails on the floor and tried to express our deepest sorrow at turning down Slim's offer of stale bread crusts. At the same time, I tried to let him know that I might consider a better offer. Say, sardines, Vienna sausage, piece of cheese, or any one of the many varieties of fresh meat that might have been tucked away in his freezer compartment. This was a delicate situation that required near-perfect coordination between tail-whapping and a sad look in the eyes. I thought I'd pulled it off pretty well, but Slim missed it. Dumb dogs, he said, and built another ketchup sandwich. Suddenly, and all at once, with no warning whatsoever, the lights went out, and we were plunged into total darkness, except for the little flare of light that showed through the air vent on the stove. I could hear Slim mumbling to himself in the kitchen.
Well, there goes the electric. Must have gotten 5 snowflakes. That's usually what it takes. Now, where'd I put the candles?
In the process of stumbling around to find a candle, he kicked over a sack of garbage that had been sitting beside the stove for 2 or 3 weeks.
Dadgum garbage. You'd think somebody around here would take it out to the barrel.
He found a stub of candle in one of the cabinets and struck a wooden match with his thumbnail. Pretty good trick as long as you don't get burning sulfur under the nail. But he did, and that seemed to wake him up. That was the first time I'd ever seen a grown cowboy sucking his thumb. He lit the candle and then went looking for his coal oil lamp, which he found and lit with the candle. Holding the lamp about shoulder high, he went to the front door and looked out.
Dogs, that old wind is getting up. If it should happen to start snowing hard, we'd be in for a blizzard, sure enough.
He set the lamp down and had just lowered himself into the rocking chair when, all of a sudden, and out of nowhere, a bell began to ring. I shot a glance at Drover. What was that?
Sounded like a bell to me.
Exactly, but there are no bells in this house.
and it rang a second time.
There it goes again, Hank! What does it mean?
It means... I pushed myself up from the hearth and switched all my hair lift-up circuits over to manual. It means that the time has come for us to bark. I don't know what that thing is or where it came from, Drover, but a dog can never go wrong by barking. And so we barked. We threw ourselves into the... Okay. In my original analysis, I had more or less forgotten that Slim had a telephone in his house and that telephones make a ringing sound, but not all the time. That's the crucial point. Say those telephones will lurk in silence for hours and sometimes even days, and just about the time you've forgotten about them, they'll stop lurking and start ringing. And for that reason, I've never trusted a telephone. There's something just a little sneaky. I don't like him, is the point. It took Slim a couple of minutes to find the phone. It had gotten lost beneath the shifting, whispering sands, so to speak, of his living room, meaning that it had been buried beneath back issues of Livestock Weekly, dirty socks and old shirts, picture show calendars, and other items too numerous to mention. It rang and rang, and we barked and barked. On the fifth ring, Slim found the cord and pulled it until the phone appeared out of the rubble. He gave me a wink and said, "They can't fool me." He put the phone to his ear. "Hello? Yes? Yes? No, I wasn't in bed. I couldn't find the darn phone. Hold on a second." He scowled at me. "Hank, dry up, will you?" At that point, I figured that I had barked just about enough, so I quit. I mean, I'd kept the phone from running out of the room, right? And I'd helped Slim find it, right? So I called off the code 3, and was that a mouse sitting on the toe of Slim's boot? I narrowed my eyes and studied the object on the toe of his... Yes, it certainly appeared to be a mouse. I shot a glance at Slim. He didn't see it. "What? No, I'm babysitting Loper's dogs tonight, and they were barking at the telephone. No, I have no idea why a dog would bark at the telephone, but they did. Yes, I'm very proud. Would you like to buy one of them?" I wasn't paying much attention to the conversation. By that time, I had gone into stealthy crouch mode, and was moving on silent paws and weaving my way through the clutter, closing the distance between me and the alleged mouse. 5 feet away from the target, I stopped. Froze, actually, and asked data control for a confirmation of my original sighting. It came back in a matter of seconds. Yes, indeed, we had us a live mouse at 0205. Not only was this mouse alive and sitting on the toe of Slim's boot, but he was staring at me and wiggling his whiskers. Have we discussed mice? I am the sworn enemy of all mice, especially those that stare and wiggle their whiskers. I mean, you'd think a mouse would have sense enough to run at the approach of a head of ranch security, but this one seemed to think he owned the place. Well, he didn't own the place, and I was fixing to send that little feller a message from the School of Hard Knocks. I trimmed out my ears to the full alert position, punched in manual lift-up on the hackle circuit, switched all guidance systems over to smell-o-radar control, and began the approach procedure. Sounds pretty complicated, huh? You bet it is. A lot of your ordinary dogs just go blundering into a combat situation and won't take the time to use their instruments. I mean, they'd probably say that a little mouse wasn't worth all the effort. Me? I figure that combat is combat, whether you're going up against a silver monster bird or a sneaky little mouse. On my ranch, we take this stuff pretty serious. Okay, I eased forward 2 steps. Nose out, ears up, eyes narrowed, hackles raised, tail thrust forward, and locked in at the proper angle. We like to run that tail at about a 20-degree angle in deals like this, although I've gone as high as 25 degrees on a few occasions. I stopped and rolled my eyes towards Slim.
He wasn't paying any attention to me, which meant that he wasn't aware of the trespasser on the toe of his boot. I went to manual eyeball shift and turned my gaze back to the mouse. He was sitting on his back legs now, staring at me with his beady little eyes and, I don't know, biting his fingernails, sucking his thumb, picking his teeth, whatever it is that mice do when they put their paws in their mouth. That's what he was doing, which was serious enough in itself. But it also appeared that he was smirking at me. That little mouse had just made a foolish mistake. No smirk mouses at Hank the Cowdog and lives to tell about it. Slim was talking again.
Yes, the lights went off about 5 minutes ago. Wind must be blowing the lines around. Coal oil? Sure, I got a gallon of it somewhere if I can find it. You bet. Come on over.
I eased forward another step. The target had not moved. I was now within range. I prepared all systems for launch and punched in the commands to raise lip shields and arm all tooth cannons. All systems were ready. I entered the countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Charge! Banzai! Mice are quicker than you might suppose, which probably explains why I missed the stupid mouse and sank my teeth into Slim's boot and set off a very strange chain of events.